It's time for It's All About Food with your host,
Karen Hartglass and
Gary DeMattei. That's a great theme song. How long have we used that theme song?
About 11 plus years when we opened this show.
Yeah.
That theme song was written by
Barry Hartglass,
my brother.
Karen's brother, who is also a vegan.
He is.
A very good vegan.
A good vegan. Are you a good vegan or a bad vegan?
Are you a good witch or a sandwich? I'm not a witch at all.
I'm Dorothy Gale from Kansas. But is this the witch?
Put him in the bag, Henry.
Okay, look.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? We just got back from New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, New Hampshire.
You know who I think is from New Hampshire?
No.
Seth Meyers, talking about talk show hosts.
Right. Were we?
Yeah. Well, we're talk show hosts.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, you better watch out. I might ask you some hard-hitting questions. Do you have any regrets? If you could do it all over again, what would you do differently?
With respect to my podcast,
I have no idea,
my life, or yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea, but when you watch talk shows, that's what everybody talks about. They always have these hard-hitting questions.
Yes. Well, here on It's All About Food, we talk about food and food.
And food.
And food.
And how it relates to food. And if it relates to food, what else does it relate to besides food?
The only really hard-hitting question that I ever ask is, why is it okay to eat meat?
If your guests eat meat.
Yes.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, and that always gets them, right?
It does. Yeah, we talked about it last week, the week before. It's just a mind-boggling question that I have and I ask. I'm waiting for a good answer.
Okay, so New Hampshire. We were just in New Hampshire.
Yeah, so last week you heard about all the food we packed before we drove to New Hampshire. And then all this week, we ate it. End of story.
Now we're back in New York. We brought back far less food than we brought to New Hampshire.
And we'd had some good eating.
And yesterday and the day before when we got back, when did we get back?
We got back. We left on a Saturday. We came back on a Saturday.
This is Tuesday, so we got back a few days ago. Our refrigerator was empty, but our pantry was full. We had lots of things in our pantry. And we received some food that we had ordered before we left. Some of these cans of jackfruit that we got.
Oh, yeah. So before we left for our trip, we ordered some food that we thought might be fun to take with us since we were bringing all of our food and planning on making our meals in the condo where we were staying. We talked about this last week. It's coronavirus. We weren't planning on grocery shopping or going to restaurants. So we thought we'd buy some treats. And one of the orders we made didn't come before we left. But we got it when we came home. And that was a bunch of different cans of jackfruit. So some plain jackfruit and some yellow curry jackfruit and red curry jackfruit. All from Native Forest brand, the Native Forest brand from Edward and Sons.
Yeah, it's delicious. We've tried it before and it's great, and we just decided to order a bunch of it.
Yeah.
And we also got in some raisins, oil-free raisins.
Yeah, have we talked about raisins with oil before?
Probably. It's very difficult to find them without oil, and we found them without oil. And so we ordered, a 1,000-pound bag? It looks like a 1,000-pound bag.
8 or 10 pounds.
An 8 or 10 pound bag.
We discovered the company Food to Live a while ago. We've mentioned it once or twice on this program. They are in Brooklyn and they're a distributor. But when you buy in large quantities from them, you can get reasonable prices. I don't recommend buying 1 pound or 2 pound of things because they're really, really expensive. But when you buy 8, 9, 10 pounds, you get a very competitive price.
Right.
And they sell organic nuts and seeds and dried fruit and all kinds of things. So we've been buying more things from them.
We've been buying more in bulk, more organic foods in bulk.
And trying to find more room in our freezer and the pantry.
Well, we are working on a cookbook, so we're going to be making lots of recipes.
Yeah, you have to have all of this stuff on hand.
You have to have it all on hand. We've mentioned this before on the program, but responsible eating and living after 12 years.
After 10 years.
10 years, excuse me. But you've been doing It's All About Food for 12 years. We are actually doing our own cookbook. It's very exciting.
It is.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. But you know what? It's hard work.
It is. We've been working hard.
I'm having a whole new feeling of respect for all the cookbook authors I've spoken with on this program.
Over the years, and you have
spoken
to quite a few cookbook authors. I'm looking at a lot of cookbooks right now at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters here in New York City. You have quite a collection, and all of those cookbooks represent an author that you've talked to.
Most of them. We spent the week doing a lot of walking. We did some hiking in the Lincoln Woods Trailhead in the White Mountain National Forest.
It was great.
It was really beautiful, and it snowed.
It snowed one day, and then it was
beautiful. And then it got beautiful. Well, I thought it was beautiful when it was snowing.
Yes, of course. A lot of people feel that snow is beautiful.
And then we ventured out on a day trip to Burlington, Vermont. Has anybody been to Burlington, Vermont?
Raise your hand. Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Now, that's where Bernie Sanders is the senator,
Vermont.
Right? Vermont.
That's correct.
Right. I was very impressed with Vermont.
Back in the day, a long time ago, 20 years ago.
Back in the day.
I worked as an engineer, and one of my assignments was to visit IBM in Essex Junction, which is the next town over Burlington, Vermont. And when I would get off from work, I typically would go into downtown Burlington to get a bite to eat, hang around, and I remember what a cool town it was.
It was a cool
so
town.
So I wanted to bring Gary there along, and we noticed a couple of things. Number
yes,
one,
masks.
Vermont has a very low rate of COVID-19, and we know why.
Yeah, you could tell. Just the compliance is extraordinary. Everybody complies with all of the rules and regulations, and there aren't that many. Just wear a mask.
They're wearing masks.
Yeah.
Period.
And it was great. It was just so wonderful. And it was out of respect. I mean, you wear a mask out of respect for the person next to you or the person in front of you or behind you. And it was wonderful. Everybody was very respectful, very kind. And we walked all over Burlington, Vermont.
We walked along Lake Champlain.
That sounds like Champagne.
Yes.
But it has a, it's not.
It's Champlain. Not Champagne, it's Champlain.
That's right.
The Champlain. No, I'm trying to, the rain in Spain stays mainly on the Champlain.
Yes. It was beautiful. That walk was gorgeous. And everybody was wearing a mask. And even the dogs were wearing masks. cars were wearing masks. Everyone was wearing masks. And
Karen got hungry.
Karen did get hungry.
And I actually went to my first restaurant in over 8 months.
And I went with you.
And we discovered the Tom Girl Kitchen. It's one of these order at the counter places. They sell lots of organic, vegan, yummy bowls and smoothies.
It was mostly all vegan, wasn't it?
It was all vegan, except if you wanted to, you could add a locally grown egg.
Oh, an egg, right. That was it. Why in the heck would you want to do that?
I don't know, but...
Anyway, so you could get an egg there if... But that was the only thing that wasn't
correct.
Vegan.
Correct, yeah.
And what did you order, Karen? I didn't order anything. I was too afraid. But that's me. Karen was brave, and she went in with her mask on, and I sat outside at one of the tables, the outdoor tables. And it was, as we just mentioned, it was a beautiful day in Burlington, Vermont. And so Karen went into Tom Girl Kitchen. And
I got this kale, Southwest kale bowl with a cilantro lime dressing. And you know what, everybody, if you want to know more about it, you can go to Responsible Eating and Living, because my most recent blog post, What Vegans Eat blog post, talks all about that restaurant and a bunch of other things we did while in New Hampshire.
You could see an incredible picture of our breakfast.
Our last breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah. Incredible.
Great. It was great. And all kinds of other great food. But yeah, the salad is here. I'm looking at it now. It had avocado and all kinds of great things. And how did it taste?
Yummy.
It was good?
It was simply yummy, yes.
And but how did it taste to be in a restaurant?
Well, it was just an amazing event, but this was a very hip bowl. So not only did it have kale in it, it had forbidden black rice.
Yeah.
And it had red cabbage, it had avocado, it had this really tasty walnut, like a chutney or something. It was quite good.
Yeah, it looks good. I'm on their website right now, and it looks just as good as it looked when I was there. It's a very clean operation, so if you're in Burlington, Vermont, and you're a fraidy cat like I am to actually venture out and go into a restaurant, a hard-hitting question that I would ask myself is there anything you regret on this trip? And I think one of the regrets would be that I didn't have a salad with you at Tom Girl Kitchen.
Well, then we'll have to go back.
We'll
Gary.
Have to go back.
It's only like a 5-hour drive from here.
You know, it was a really cool vibe because it's a restaurant that's also attached to other restaurants and attached to art galleries. And so just walking through was really fun.
Yeah,
well, I haven't been retail shopping in an actual brick and mortar store in a long time. So I was able to kind of look at some artwork that was up. And there was nobody there. I mean,
it wasn't very crowded. It
wasn't crowded at all. And there was a really cool vibe. It reminded me a lot of Santa Cruz, California, Bay Area. And speaking of weather, the Bay Area is having some very, very cold weather. Very cold.
Yeah, what's going on with that, folks? We've got cold weather in California in the 40s and 50s. People are really jumping out of their skin or jumping into their skin in lots of blankets trying to cover up because it's cold.
We need that kind of weather in Northern California. They've just had those devastating fires. So hopefully they'll get more rain.
And more snow.
And more snow. And I understand it's snowing in Tahoe. And then we have friends of mine that are in California reporting that there's ice on the roads. They're getting ready to break out the skis and head up north to the Sierras to do some skiing, hopefully. So that's good, but unseasonably cold.
Yeah, it's unseasonably cold. What else can we say about it? And then we have Eta blowing up north.
Yeah, what is that about Eta?
Just another hurricane.
But aren't we past hurricane season? Technically?
Yes, past the hurricane season, and hurricanes still keep coming. So
well,
there's
I
that.
Hope all those folks in Florida are okay, safe, and getting ready to batten down the hatches.
Yeah, well, Eta was down in Central America. I got in touch with my friends in Costa Rica, and it was nasty there. Not as bad as in Nicaragua, which really got hit hard. But my friends in Costa Rica sent me videos, just so wet, floody, lots of floods, mudslides. And then here we are in New York City yesterday, 75 and sunny. Today, high 60s. Just beautiful.
It was unbelievable weather.
November 9th and 10th. What's going on?
We actually had some of the greatest weather I've ever seen in New York City. I mean, we were out on our terrace yesterday, sunning, and the day before.
Yeah. So people like to talk about the weather. It's a good icebreaker. It's a good kind of an easy thing to talk about because normally talking about the weather really doesn't give you any conflict between parties. You know, it's a safe subject, but you know what? It's not a safe subject because the weather is crazy. The weather is messed up.
It's right up there with politics now.
Warm in New York, hurricanes outside of the hurricane season, unseasonably cold in California. We've got trouble. Right here in every city.
Right here in every city.
And it's called global warming.
Yeah, or climate change.
And just because it's cold somewhere doesn't mean global warming doesn't exist. We're looking at bigger variabilities in weather change, and that's what we're seeing.
Right, and what's a great way to combat climate change?
Is that one of the tough questions you're going to give
me? This is a hard-hitting question.
Hard-hitting question.
Karen Harklaas, how would you combat climate change?
Number one, everybody goes vegan. Everybody stops eating meat, stops eating chicken, stops eating fish, stops eating dairy. And if you can't do that, significantly reduce consumption of animals. And then what happens? We dramatically slow down the rate that the climate is warming.
Right.
And when we slow it down and we're not warming as quickly, we have time to make significant change with our technology. and find ways to suck that carbon out of the atmosphere and shove it back underground.
Boy, we saw a lot of trees, didn't we? And that's one way to suck carbon out of the
atmosphere.
Yeah,
absolutely. Growing trees.
Growing trees.
Yeah, it was so nice to walk in the woods and breathe.
It was great. It was really great. Here's a hard-hitting question. Is there anything that you wish you would have done on this trip that you didn't get to do, or that anything you missed from 8 months ago when you went on your last trip before sheltering in place?
There's a lot of great parks in New Hampshire. Lots of national forest trails. And we went to the one that was closest to where we were, but there are many more.
So you'd like to go back and hit some more trails?
I would. I'd like to hit the trails, do some more and adventuring.
I think we were planning on trying to get to Burlington, Vermont and Maine.
Yep. So Burlington, Vermont was about 2 hours away from where we were going west. And Portland, Maine was about 2 hours from where we were going east. And we were thinking about stopping there, but we didn't. So anybody that's in Portland, Maine, we missed you. Sorry.
But we're planning on getting back out on the road very soon. And we'll let you know on this program where we'll be. If you have a great vegan restaurant that you think is safe to try, let us know, especially if you're in Maine, because that might be where we go next.
So one of the things that you may think is kind of crazy, Gary, but I find
crazy, Gary,
when we stay in a resort like where we stayed, it's a condo and it has a kitchen, and I like being able to cook my meals even when I'm away, but the kitchens never are complete. They have a lot of stuff, but it's never your own kitchen. What? And we don't have a pantry of infinite supplies like we do at home. So we brought a lot of food, but you don't have this big palette of possibilities. And there's a challenge to that, making interesting meals every day with the limited amount of things you have to work with. And I like doing that. And then at the end of the week, when we're leaving and we have little bits of things, put it all together and make something fabulous, which we did.
One of the first meals I ever had with you on the road was in Cape Cod, and you made me a tomato paste, garbanzo bean, and peanut butter stew.
Yeah, it was like an African stew, which is kind of a classic dish with peanuts, tomatoes, and chickpeas or some kind of bean.
It was at a timeshare in Cape Cod, and you made that stew, and I'll never forget it.
And we had an even smaller kitchen there. It was like a little efficiency kitchen.
Yeah, it was incredible.
We had one pot, I think.
It was such a romantic meal.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
We do have a recipe for African peanut stew at Responsible Eating and Living.com. We do.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should call it Lover's Stew.
Okay. I didn't see that on the list of recipes for our cookbook. We might have to put that in there.
Oh, we might.
Just because it has... Because
our cookbook is going to be our story.
Exactly.
I think we could tell everybody that.
Yeah.
And anecdotal little tales in between the recipes, which I think is going to be really charming and wonderful and lovely.
Yes. Yeah. The other thing is we had a microwave.
Now, we don't own a microwave at Responsible Eating and Living. We don't have one at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters. So whenever we go on one of these vacations where there's these efficiency kitchens and or larger, we use a microwave. And we always sing the same jingle. Give me the microwave life. Yeah.
That's right. It's fun.
It is fun. But then when we come back, we realize how we don't miss it.
No.
No.
I like traditional cooking. I boil water in a pot on a stovetop.
Well, now you boil it in Angie.
No, I boil it in Angie. That's right. Yeah. Angie is our Breville tea maker.
Named for the person who gave it to us.
Yeah.
But using a microwave, especially when you don't have a stove, is very challenging. And these efficiency kitchens, just to get back to your point about how it's challenging when you don't have everything around you. So one of my regrets, I think, would be on the next trip, I'm bringing my own knives. Because I have this scar on my finger from using this knife that was just what you would expect it to be in a timeshare kitchen. the handle kept coming almost off. Every time I would push it back on, it would pinch my skin.
We didn't plan on talking about knives, but you brought it up and I want to talk about them. So this condo came with one of those wood blocks, with a bunch of knives in them. So it came with knives and they seemed reasonably sharp, but the major chef knife that we use a lot for cutting, it needs to be weighted. The handle needs to have a little heft in it. And that helps you manipulate going up and down and chopping. And this knife that we had, it was light as a feather. It had no weight.
It was a terrible knife. And it really was dangerous. And that was my point. These knives that are just obviously there for show and not for any use. It was unbelievable.
You had to be really careful using them.
I'm definitely bringing knives next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
We should start making a list now because we're going to be going away soon.
Yeah, we're going to get out of here again soon.
So for people that are getting into cooking and learning how to make recipes and meals, it's really important to have at least one good knife.
One good chef's knife.
Very important.
And make sure your knives are sharp. And you know, a lot of these places used to have, and maybe they have them online now, they have a knife skills class. And I really recommend anyone who's wanting to venture out and try to do some cooking in a more advanced way, take a knife course. Take a course on how to handle knives.
Well, not just cooking in an advanced way, but preparing meals in an efficient way.
Right.
Because you can save so much time when you have a good knife and you know how to chop.
Exactly. But it's that time of year. You know, the weather feels unseasonably warm here in New York, but there's also the leaves that are turning gold and yellow right outside our apartment window. And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of pie weather. Mm. This is the weather when people are starting to think about baking pies. We have a lot of great pie recipes.
We do. I'm having a vision right now. I remember in childhood books that had cartooned illustrations, when the mother would make a pie, she would leave it out on the windowsill.
Yeah, I remember.
Who does that?
I've never done it.
Has anybody out there ever put a pie on a windowsill?
Does anybody even have a windowsill that big to put on? To put a pie on?
Yeah, I don't. That would be pretty funny, though, to put it out here and have it fall over on somebody below me.
Oh, yeah, no.
No.
We don't want to do that.
We're not putting pies on the windowsill. That's what wire racks are for.
But my favorite pie of the year, obviously, is apple.
Is it your favorite pie?
Yes, especially the way you make it.
It was funny. I was just reading in the New York Times an article related to recipes and food, and they were talking about mixing different apples in the pie and how to do it. I scan a lot of stuff, so I didn't really get into the details of it, but I just thought it was amusing because somebody was looking for a reason to talk about mixing up apples in a pie. There's supposed to be like one kind of apple you put in a pie, right?
Well, Granny Smith is supposed to make the best pie.
Supposed to. I never think twice about it. I just get a bunch
of apples.
All apples
make great pies.
And I slice them up and I make a pie. I don't peel them. I don't follow any of the rules.
Apple pie and ice cream, or vegan ice cream, of course, is really what I look forward to this time of year.
Okay, we're going to have to get some ice cream then. We haven't had ice cream
like
in
Thanksgiving.
Centuries.
We haven't had ice cream in a long time. Vegan ice cream, of course. Well, actually, the last time we had vegan ice cream was that Little Gelato place in Manhattan.
Oh, Gelato place in Manhattan.
They just opened up. They were from Italy, the brother and sister team, and we were so excited that they were here.
That was just before COVID started.
That was my last trip into Manhattan.
Yes.
It was after an acting class. I met you. We went to Actors Equity. You signed your contract for your 9 weeks in Wisconsin.
That never happened. It's supposed to happen in January, and I'm waiting to hear from the theater again because things aren't looking good in Wisconsin right now.
No, they're not.
COVID-wise.
I wish those people nothing but the best luck with this terrible virus.
But let's go back to pie.
Pie. Yeah, let's talk about pie.
So we have several apple pie recipes at Responsible Eating and Living. We have a covered apple pie, a double crust.
Mmm, that's my favorite.
You do? You like the double crust?
Oh, yeah. The more crust, the better.
To me, it's like too crusty.
See, that's why we're perfect. You can give me the crust.
Yes.
I give you the mushrooms.
I've been heavily influenced by French cuisine, and I like to make the apple pie with no top crust, and you can see the beautiful swirl of apples.
Yeah, but if we're talking pie, I like it with both crusts.
All right. Bottom and... All right. And then there's pumpkin.
Right?
And then recently we made this coconut custard cream pie with aquafaba.
We've talked about that.
Oh, my God. And lemon meringue pie. Pie.
But it's going to be purple sweet potato pie this year, too. I mean, we're going to do some savory pies.
Okay, right? Yeah.
You have a great savory pie on the website that we've actually made on the Thanksgiving menu, which is up on our site
now. Haven't made it in a long time, but I think we should get back to that.
That is great. And the sunflower seed
with
crust.
With a sunflower seed crust.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I'm glad you put up the Thanksgiving video. It's a classic here at Responsible Eating and Living.
Just like Hallmark movies.
Yeah, one of our very first videos. And it's of course, I'm behind the camera and it's beautiful Karen Hartglass in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And making all those recipes.
And we did. And we do.
And we were talking about, in the program, we talk about how people who want to go vegan at Thanksgiving can still have a main event by stuffing a squash. Mm. And we stuff this red curry squash, which is beautiful. The pictures are gorgeous, and it tastes even better. And you can still stuff it, and pour gravy all over it and have your side dishes with it. But if you want something that's going to wow everyone, and it's not going to be a dead bird, which we highly recommend you forego this
Invite a turkey to your dinner. Yeah. Don't eat one.
We implore you to forego it this autumnal season. And whether you call this holiday Thanksgiving or giving thanks or
thanks living,
just thanks living, remember to give thanks to all living things, especially the turkey. Stuff a squash.
And stuff a squash. So there are so many varieties of squash out there, and they're beautiful.
So beautiful.
And we just discovered another one.
A brand new one.
And we discovered it really by accident. So
yeah,
we've been getting all our food delivered, and we use Go Organic NYC. We love Go Organic NYC.
Yes, we do.
And then whatever we can't get with them, I go over to Fresh Direct and see what I can pick up there. And sometimes they have organic fruit and vegetables. Not a lot, but they seem to pick up on local farms and what was available.
Yeah.
And they had this squash that looked interesting. I didn't even look at the name when I got it, but
what did it look like? It looked like a pumpkin. Like
it looked
like a little
tan pumpkin. It wasn't quite as orange as a pumpkin.
Right.
And it was smaller and maybe a little boxier, as round.
A stately pumpkin is what it says on the Rose 7 website.
Sure. A stately pumpkin. And we let it sit here for about 6 weeks before we finally cooked it.
Yeah, we went to New Hampshire and then we came back, and one of the first things we did was you popped
it. I made the squash because we haven't had a food delivery yet. And I thought, it's time to make that. I cheat when I cook a squash, and you don't have to do it like me. You could do it like Gary and the rest of the world. But I just take the squash, I put it on a sheet pan in the oven, and I bake it for an hour. I don't cut it open. I say to myself, why bother? It's hard. I don't want to cut it open. I just let it cook until it's soft, which is what I did with this. And then
you scooped out the seeds.
And then I scooped out the soft squash and separated the seeds. And if you want, you can clean the seeds and bake them and eat them, or try and grow them, whatever you'd like to do.
And it would be interesting to see if these would actually bear fruit.
Well, let's talk about this squash. So
it's called Robin's Coconut, K-O-G-I-N-U-T, squash.
Robin's Coconut squash.
Robin's Coconut squash.
This is a certified organic hybrid. It's a hybrid that a researcher breeder, M. Mazurek, created. I believe it's part of the plant breeding research at Cornell University.
In Ithaca, New York.
In Ithaca, New York.
Where I have been.
And me too.
With you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's named Robin's Coconut, or Coconut, coconut, because there was a person, Robin Osfeld, who was a collaborator on the project to create this squash and a guru in organic farming in the Finger Lakes, who had always wanted to name a new variety, and unfortunately Robin Osfeld passed on.
Oh.
And they named this squash in her memory, Robin's Coconut. And I cooked it, and then I went to work on something else. Gary finished working on something and found...
I was teaching an acting class on Zoom, and you were doing your Spanish homework.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And Karen is taking a Spanish class, and she's doing muy bueno.
No, gracias, Gary.
Right? Did I say it right?
Sí.
Okay. And I came out and saw that you had baked the Robin's Coconut squash and thought, I'm going to make some coconut coconut squash soup.
Coconut coconut.
Say that 10 times and you have yourself a kitchen tongue twister. And I did. I made this great coconut coconut squash soup and we ate it. And Karen, what was the verdict?
Oh my goodness. It was one of the best things my mouth has ever experienced.
Yeah.
Yes.
And wasn't it very much seasonal? Didn't it?
Oh, it was very autumnal when you put it in your mouth.
Autumnal time happened in the mouth.
It was amazing.
It was so amazing, beautifully
and delicately spiced.
Yes. So we have a gift for you, fair listeners, esteemed listening guests. We have a coconut coconut squash soup recipe for you up on the Responsible Eating and Living page, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and we'll probably even link to it in this.
Yes, we will. And if you try it and you like it, could you please let us know?
Yes.
Yeah, give us your feedback.
Give us your feedback. The coconut squash, the Robin's coconut squash.
As I mentioned, I took the seeds out, and I'm not sure what kind of squash the seeds would grow if you could actually grow a Robin's coconut squash from these seeds, because it is a hybrid. I'm not quite sure what will happen to it. And at the website row7seeds.com, you can buy seeds for this squash along with other things, but it's sold out.
And if you're looking for this squash, the appearance is it's a ribbed squash, approximately 6 inches in diameter, 2 to 4 pounds. The field notes, they have all kinds of information at row7seeds.com. Cool looking squash, but the soup is great. It's got a little touch of nutmeg, a little touch of cinnamon, a little touch of Madras curry.
I suppose if you can't find a Robin's coconut squash, you could use another squash.
Sure.
A butternut squash
would work well. An acorn squash might work.
Sure.
Or, you know, experiment with it. The cool thing that I did with it is I made the soup and then I pureed it with our
hand mixer.
If you don't have a hand mixer, then I would recommend, and it'll be in the recipe, that you let it get to room temperature before you put it in the blender to blend it up. I was tempted not even to blend it, but I did. And I'm glad I did.
Kabocha squash could probably be used in this recipe too.
Right.
That's another great squash.
It's excellent. And it's squash season, so there's going to be squash aplenty out there. And don't forget to check out our Thanksgiving page, because we stuff a squash with some great stuffing. It's a polenta stuffing. And of course, this is all in preparation for the big feasting day, Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But every day is a feasting day around here, so...
It is. And I don't know what kind of Thanksgiving people have planned, if they're going to get together with their families, with their pods, or not, or have a Thanksgiving on Zoom.
I don't know. With all these political problems going on, people might not like each other anymore in their own families.
There's that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things are getting really ugly.
You can always come to Responsible Eating and Living and watch us eat. We'll do a live Facebook feed of us eating on Thanksgiving.
Okay, there's an idea we haven't thought of.
Yeah. There's always a first time. I've never gone live on Facebook, so maybe Thanksgiving would be a good time to go live.
Yeah, we haven't quite figured out what we're going to do this year.
No. What are you all going to do this year? Let us know. Give us some good ideas.
Last year, I had a dream come true where we went to Candle 79 for Thanksgiving. And we did that just in the nick of time, just before Candle 79 was bought out to become a luxury apartment building. And who knows if that's even happening now. And then COVID happened.
Boy, do I miss Candle 79. I miss all the candles. Candle West, Candle 79. But I guess Candle Cafe is still there.
It is still there.
Great. I haven't been since...
Yeah, we know.
A long time.
We know.
Yeah, so I have to get out and get to a restaurant. And we were supposed to go into Manhattan, and we told everybody we were going to go into Manhattan, and I chickened out.
Womp.
Womp, womp, womp. But I'm getting my courage up. And I'm going to go into Manhattan, and guess where I'm going to go?
Where?
I'm going to go to a vegan pizza parlor, because I've been craving pizza.
Mm.
And the last time I had a vegan pizza in Manhattan, it wasn't bad. It was one of the Matthew Kenny restaurants.
Did we have pizza there?
Yeah, we went to all three of them. Remember the ones that are right next door to each
other?
I want to go and find a vegan pizza place. And
there's plenty of them.
Grab a pizza, go into Central Park, and eat it in Central Park.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to eat it in the restaurant. I don't know if I have that much courage. But I'll go into Central Park and eat it, or I'll go sit on a bench somewhere when I bring in my alcohol wipes with me. I'll bring my alcohol wipes and my alcohol spray.
Well, you know, Gary, you're smart because we can't be careful enough.
I am so careful.
And we're seeing all around this country, all around the world, again, a second wave, some places a third wave.
Right. Hey, I spray the doorknobs before I open them, but I'm also wearing rubber gloves. I'm the guy that does that. All right. I agree. You just can't be careful enough. I know people who have this disease and they tell me it's no party.
Yeah. Some people have had it and it hasn't been bad, but it can be really, really horrible.
Yeah. A really dear friend of mine, one of my ex-students who's now a mom, is what they call a long hauler. God bless her and her husband and her son. But she has been going through it for several months now. She hasn't been able to shake it.
Mm.
And that's what they call a long hauler. Yeah, be careful. You can't be too careful. But we're seeing numbers go up again. It's no time to relax.
No. Yeah. And then there may be a vaccine. The news is saying Pfizer is having some great results. And that's great. But what we know right now is that if we had 100% compliance of masks, that would be more effective than any vaccine.
Exactly. So wear your mask, and it will also help you in other ways. Wearing a mask can prevent the flu, right?
Yeah.
And they're getting so creative and clever. The fashionistas out there with these masks that people are wearing. I've seen some incredible ones. And now you walk down the streets of New York, which we do. We walk the streets of New York all the time. And normally there would be like a little table and somebody is selling winter scarves and winter gloves and umbrellas and things because of the fall weather and the inclement weather that's about to happen. Now they're selling masks on the street. They're selling boxes and boxes of surgical masks. I mean, we adapt.
We are adaptable. Yes.
Yeah, we're doing great work out there here in New York. Our numbers are spiking a little bit too, but not as much as other places. That's what I want to do. I want to go into Manhattan, get my courage up, get my alcohol wipes.
And get a pizza. With some kind of vegan cheese on it.
Oh, yeah. You don't like the vegan cheese, but...
I like some better than others.
I think the pizza idea is just to take it with us and then to go someplace out away from people and eat it. But anyway, that's what I'd like to do.
Okay.
And have pie, too. Did I mention pie?
Pie and pie. Yeah. Isn't pizza pie pie?
Pizza pie and apple pie with some vegan ice cream.
And there's Thanksgiving for you.
That would be a fun Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Maybe a beer, right? Pizza, beer, apple pie, vegan ice cream.
Let's talk a little bit about art. We always like to bring art into the program. We kind of committed
to art
and truth at the beginning of this year.
I was just going to say, art is truth, and that's what we're all about. We're all about the truth. Here at Responsible Eating and Living, we've devoted our organization to finding the truth about food and how it affects not only the environment and the animals, but how it affects you as an individual. I've seen a great number of wonderful, wonderful signs that are going around now on the internet. And one of the great ones was an apology to the animals. I'm sorry I didn't know sooner. And I always say that on this program. Dear animals, I'm sorry it took me so long. That's a great sign. And someone is holding it up who's just gone vegan. That, to me, really got me in my heart. Because I say that all the time on this program. And
Yeah, you do.
I don't articulate it in quite the same way. But one of my regrets would be that I haven't started this adventure sooner. What a great time to start, though, now, when there's so many products and veganism has taken over the world, basically, with respect to food products that are manufactured and put in grocery stores that are vegan, and restaurants that are popping up that are vegan, and McDonald's.
Oh, we don't want to talk too much about McDonald's.
It's finally going to be giving us a veggie vegan burger. They were supposed to be launching it in 2021. Now, you know, if McDonald's is going to do it, even though they did have a vegetarian burger in India for many years.
And I believe they have one in Germany, too.
But they obviously refused to bring it to the United States. Now they're even, along with Colonel Sanders and all of these other...
They realize there's money in it.
All these other fast food giants, they're now finally starting to consider, or more than starting to consider, they are actually considering and even launching a McDonald's plant-based burger in 2021.
It's part of their McPlant series.
Plant-based McDonald's. Plant-based burger in 2021 through new McPlant platform. The fast food chain is developing new plant-based items for its global menu with its new platform made exclusively for McDonald's by McDonald's. And you want to hear more about the story or read more about the story, you can go to Veg News. They have it on their website.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah.
And that's where the money is. It's not only all about food, it's all about money. And companies are realizing they can get more of it if they offer plant-based items.
Yeah, so good for you, McDonald's, going plant-based burger in 2021. What else is going to be vegan? Are they going to be doing vegan fries? Or are they still going to be cooking them in...
Oh, that's a really good question. Because you know, everybody, that there's beef flavoring that's put in the McDonald's french fries in the factory.
Right.
They cook in vegetable oil, but it's got beef flavoring in it. So
McDonald's
fries are not vegan. The thing that I like about McDonald's is the restroom. If I need one and they're nearby, that's where I like to leave my...
Vegan poop.
Vegan poop.
Karen leaves her vegan poop at McDonald's. At McDonald's. McDonald's doesn't need any more advertisement from us, but I'm glad that they are at least attempting to put a vegan burger on their menu in 2021.
We've just been through this election thing, and we're still...
Have we?
We're going through it. Everybody's at each other's throats and arguing and saying that this is a lie and this is truth. And in politics, truth is not something that is important.
No.
It's the avoidance of truth.
That's what's important.
No matter which side you're on, for decades, we have had the avoidance of truth when it comes to food and when it comes to factory farms and when it comes to animals.
Of course, because it's all about politics.
And capitalism and exploitation and make money. And I want to believe that this next administration starts to address that, starts to address global warming, because we need some significant change now more than ever. There are some signs that Kamala Harris, for example, she has recognized that meat is a problem. She's been quoted as saying that she likes an occasional cheeseburger, but she realizes that we all need to reduce our meat consumption. This is where we need to be in the 21st century.
Well, didn't she come right out and say that meat is destroying the planet?
She did connect it to global warming.
Right.
Yes.
And that's huge.
Yeah, we need all of our politicians to be recognizing science and recognizing global warming. And have you noticed? I call it global warming. There was a time we used to call it global warming, and then because of politics, the phrase was changed to climate change. The phrase was modified to climate change. But what's happening is the planet is warming. And this is dangerous for lots of reasons.
You have an excellent quote. I'm usually the guy that brings quotes on the program, but you pointed out an excellent quote that speaks to this subject by one of my favorite playwrights, the great Harold Pinter, when he did his art Truth and Politics speech when he received the Nobel Prize.
Can I read it?
Yeah, would you mind? Because it really does speak to what it is that you're talking about.
In a beautiful... Harold Pinter, for those of you who don't know, was a British playwright, screenwriter, director, and actor. And he wrote some wonderful pieces. We saw The Betrayal, which was amazing.
He wrote Homecoming. He wrote Old Times.
The French Lieutenant's Woman.
He did that screenplay. The Birthday Party, Mountain Language, Ashes to Ashes, just tremendous amount of theater, political theater.
So this is part of a speech, and I'm going to jump into the middle of it where I feel it's the meatiest. And he said, "The majority of politicians, on the evidence available to us, are interested not in truth, but in power, and in the maintenance of that power. To maintain that power, it is essential that people remain in ignorance. That they live in ignorance of the truth, even the truth of their own lives. What surrounds us, therefore, is a vast tapestry of lies upon which we feed." And we're seeing that now more than ever.
And as a former meat eater, I can attest that those lies are what we all fed on. We didn't want to know how our food got to the table. We didn't care. We didn't want to see it. And when people started to talk about it, I would say, you know, I don't want to know about it. So, I mean, we're just as much at fault as the politicians.
We all feel like we're in a scary time right now and wondering what's going to happen. We've got the president-elect Biden and vice president-elect Kamala Harris. We have a president who won't concede. We have people that are saying the vote wasn't right, that there was fraud involved. We have people saying that's crazy, that's nonsense. There's all kinds of conspiracy theories going around. And people are quite polarized. Hopefully, and we'll get through this in a few days. But meanwhile, there's still this misleading information that we're always getting about food, no matter which party is in place. I want to believe that's going to change. But for a long time, that's just something that doesn't get any press. That just doesn't get any attention.
The misleading information that we have gotten about food is really the biggest crime right now that's going on. And it continues. And I'm really glad to hear that
Kamala has said something about it. Yeah.
Has said
that's
something
very
about
hopeful.
It. And we know that Cory Booker is out there trying to speak truth and about our food choices and how it affects the planet.
And during COVID and with this current administration, we saw the worst possible things happening. We had people working in slaughterhouses, which is probably the worst job on the planet.
Yes.
There are more accidents there than anywhere. And all these people were falling ill from COVID. And the president said, keep those slaughterhouses open. Keep the meat flowing because America needs their meat. And this was another opportunity that was lost.
Right.
Lost. We could have closed those slaughterhouses, encouraged people to eat more plants, less meat, had them get healthier so that they could fight the coronavirus even better. But we went in the opposite direction.
Hopefully things will change.
Hopefully things will change. You and I, we lean on art and what screenwriters say, what playwriters say, what artists paint. We talked about Suco last week. We could talk about authors, too, because writing is a form of art. I wanted to mention Kim Stallwood. You were telling me about him. He's been on this program when he came
Author
out with that book, Growl.
Growl, right. Not to be confused with Howl by Allen Ginsberg. This is called Growl by Kim Stallwood. Yeah, so the Kim Stallwood Archive of Research Material documenting the history of the animal rights movement will become part of the British Library's permanent holdings starting in autumn.
Wow.
The British Library is the National Library of the United Kingdom and provides information services to academic, business, research, and scientific communities. Quote, "The archive is an extremely valuable resource for researchers, students, and anyone interested in the history of the animal rights movement, animal welfare, and food activism." Rachel Foss, head of Contemporary Archives and Manuscripts, Contemporary British Collections at the British Library. The research material, which comprises nearly 600 organizations' files, 150 people files, and 118 subject files complements the library's earlier acquisition of materials from writer and animal advocate Richard Ryder. Way to go, Kim.
He calls himself the Grouchy Vegan.
The Grouchy Vegan. He's a great guy. I just want to congratulate him and all he's doing for the animal rights movement.
To have a library that focuses on the animal rights movement, that just puts it all right there on the map.
There's some good news out there.
That's good news.
That is great news. I mean, I know there's not much good news, but...
There is good news. It's just the news is drowning in certain topics.
Well, I think...
And doesn't focus on
the
others.
Individual who is trying to control the press is doing a great job, and that's the man who everybody's talking about now, the guy who won't concede. I don't like mentioning his name. I don't want to give him any more press, but he wasn't getting enough attention, so now he's back taking all the attention away from the good things that are going on.
It's been a 4-year reality show.
Well, it's what happens when you have a petulant child in charge. That's basically what we have. One of the memes going around is, if you think this is going to be a smooth transition, you have never tried to pull a 4-year-old out of a Chuck E. Cheese. So, segueing from my story about pizza to Chuck E. Cheese, I think, is another example of how brilliant we are on this program. We just plan everything in advance, don't we?
That's right. One thing connects with the other.
And, you know, I see on a lot of the veg sites that I follow and a lot of the people that are vegan that I follow on Instagram and things, that another thing in addition to pie that people are doing a lot of these days is muffins. There's a lot of muffin baking going on.
A lot of muffin baking. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I went through a muffin period several times in my life.
Yeah, yeah. Our good friend Fran Costigan, she posted a great photo on her Instagram page. She calls them a healthy snack. She had them for breakfast, and it looks like a really delicious muffin. She made it with oat flour, jam, and the jam can be switched out to nut butter or chocolate.
Mm.
The grandkids call these Franma Power Muffins. Franma. I love that. And if you go to Fran's Instagram page, Good Cakes Fran, and you direct message her, she will send you the recipe.
Oh, yeah. Franny.
Yeah, I'm going to direct message Fran and get that recipe myself.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you've never been to Good Cakes Fran, check out our friend Fran Costigan, or as her grandkids call her,
Franma.
We love Fran.
That's sweet, and she's sweet, and her recipes are sweet.
Yeah, and these muffins look sweet. They look really good.
All right, Gary. What I'd like to do before we end the show, if it's okay, is...
Absolutely.
I want to offer a song.
Beautiful.
It's something I recorded on my first album 25 years ago.
Ooh, I love that album.
It's a piece called I Go On. It's from the musical theater work called Mass, which was composed by Leonard Bernstein with text by Bernstein and additional text by Stephen Schwartz. And it really has an interesting story, and I think it even can relate to some of the things we're going through today. The piece, Mass, the musical theater piece Mass, it was actually commissioned by Jacqueline Kennedy, and it premiered in 1971 when they were opening the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, which is in Washington, D.C. And who knows that Leonard Bernstein had an FBI file.
Yeah.
The FBI kept a file on him.
Because he spoke the truth.
Because he had leftist views. Right? And then it was during this time when they were getting ready to perform this piece at the opening of the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, the FBI warned the White House that the Latin text of this piece might contain anti-war messages, which might cause embarrassment to President Nixon. They thought it might be a problem if he attended. So he didn't go.
That sounds familiar.
And he said that it was because he felt the formal opening should really be her night.
Right.
And not anyone else's. And then fast forward to today, we have these wonderful Kennedy Center honors every year. They honor those who have contributed to the performing arts, lifetime contributions to American culture. It's always a great show, right?
Right.
We love watching it. And it's beautiful. It's touching. It's unifying. One of the things I always love to see is there are some special invited guests, and usually the president and the president's spouse are invited, and they come.
Sure.
Remember seeing Barack and Michelle and they were like rocking out to some of the music?
Yes.
It's really
many times.
Some of the best parts of America and American culture.
Brings us all together.
Now, the current sitting president has not attended the last 3 years, 2017, 2018, and 2019. And he was quoted as saying he didn't want to be there because it might create a political distraction. So we're talking about art, truth, and politics. Truth in art, avoidance of truth in politics, avoidance of showing up at an event that celebrates American culture. And of course, Leonard Bernstein was the first host when they created these Kennedy Center honors. So the words to this song that I love so much, you'll hear them in a moment. I think they're timeless, and it's all about being confused, going through difficult times, but still we go on. The song is called I Go On.
Beautiful. Let's hear it.
Okay, here it is.
Can't wait. And then we'll be back to say bye-bye. Wow. Beautiful, Karen. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's all I can say.
Thank you, Gary. All of us, we need to go on and let's celebrate another day. Thanks for joining us. I'm Karen Hartglass.
And I'm Gary DiMattei.
Have a delicious week!